Welcome to Scenes, conversations in culture with the people who know it best. We chat with guests across music, art, fashion, film, sport and technology in a bid to understand the scenes we love that little bit better. I'm your host Lenny, and in this episode I am joined by a crazy talented individual whose collaborators include Dazed, the BBC, Netflix, Boiler Room and the British Council. She's a podcaster, DJ, photographer, director, and artist, Almaz Badat. Wise beyond her years, an incredible source of inspiration, Almaz took me on a journey through the Hijra community in India, gender fluidity, the flow state, discovering her roots, the importance of being fearless with being curious, her incredible podcast, What Is This Behaviour?, Disney's process of ideation, and building a community of South Asian people going against the grain. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So Almaz, can you tell us the first thing you fell in love with and the impact it's had on you later in life?
Oh my gosh. Yes, I can.
That's a good start.
I realised that I really enjoyed video editing. It came actually out of a pain point. I used to be part of a collective, and everyone had these different sort of skills. And, you know, as things happen, I then became independent and I was editing late into the night. And I just realized that the time was just sort of flying by. And I, you know, by that point, it was like sort of 5 a.m. And I was like, whoa, I think I found something that I love, because I was just so in it. Abraham Hicks, have you heard of Abraham Hicks?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Abraham Hicks calls the vortex, which I've only discovered much later on, which we're in the zone, you're in your space, you're in like real alignment with self, you're in the flow. And it was like creating moving image. That was the first thing. Was there more to the question?
And the impact it's had on you.
Oh, the impact. That's a whole nother thing. Oh my gosh. Right. The impact was that while I was learning how to video edit, at the time I didn't realize this, but it was a bridge into music, because I was editing and then suddenly listening to sound like really differently and having to just understand sound a little bit more, which I didn't at the time. And that was about, I would say, about 5 or 6, maybe even 7 years ago. And now I DJ and I produce sound as well, and I have a podcast, and just the world of sound opened up through video and filmmaking.
So I want to take you back to what I believe is your directorial debut, Hijra's Hustle, which is a 60-minute short documentary exploring the economic environment of the Hijra community. Can you talk us through a brief synopsis of the film and then the cultural landscape that it highlights?
Yeah, sure. So I received a fund from One World Media. It was my first sort of funding that I got through. And I, at the time, was really exploring queerness, the intersection of queerness and my heritage, which is South Asian. And so in documentary sort of emergent style, I went to Bangalore and explored how the Hijra community, and Hijra is a term within the umbrella of, or underneath the umbrella of transgender. So it's, you can be a transgender person, but then if you're part of the Hijra community, you are part of another ecosystem that basically has someone at the top of the home or the family. And then you have lots of different people at different hierarchical levels underneath that. And everyone sort of works to try and keep this household. Now there's complexities, nuances, and you could say like problematic structures within that, or that come out of that. But essentially, it's trying to design a safe space to exist as a transgender person, specifically man to woman, in India. Interestingly enough, like, India recognizes the third gender. And historically, as South Asian people, gender's been quite a fluid concept. Mm. I think as people, actually, gender's been quite a fluid concept. It's much later we've put in he and she, and, you know, language has come in, and yeah. But it was really explorative, and I came back and I edited this film, and I want to expand on it a bit more. I want to come back to it now that I have a few more resources. Because when I watch back, the vein of the story and like the connectivity is there, but it didn't visually or like audibly reach where I wanted it to be. It's still screening and like people still ask for it, and there's so many more films around that subject. But really, yeah, it was an exploration of the transgender community in Bangalore, which is kind of central into South India, and looking at how these are sort of a group of people that are ostracized but really desired, because a lot of their money is coming out of sex work. And a lot of the clientele are mainly cis men and quite affluent men. So, you know, there's all of these questions that are kind of like, well, how is the most undesirable people previously seen as, they were called untouchables in the caste system, the most touched people, maybe? Or they're profiting or making money and able to earn a livelihood out of people desiring them. I found it fascinating.
What impact has that had on you and the work that you've taken on or done since?
Well, like, I identify as queer and I am South Asian, and I came back with like a lot of preconceptions handed to me by the elders in my family, really demystified. And I go back to India periodically. I really try, and it's not every year, then every other year. I like to go, because the only way I'm going to, as someone from the diaspora, is learn firsthand. Mm-hmm. Because what we're finding is a lot of the migration, the stories coming out of the migration period and our grandparents and parents that have come over, is those stories are stuck in time. My grandma came quite early in the 60s, I think, maybe even the 50s. So her India is so different to now. And now I land in India, and, well, the first time I landed in India just before the pandemic, after this particular trip, I was booked on a DJ gig, which was my first ever paid DJ gig. And that night I was invited to the after party, and I won't say too much, but I'll just say that in Delhi, they party way harder than London. Okay. And that was so different, coming from a Muslim conservative family with this idea of, and in the West we do it a lot, where we kind of think that these countries are behind everyone else, and it's not. It's just a different ecosystem, a different culture. And it's really that thing, that going to India and sort of deep diving into the queer scene, just allowed me to be quite fearless with discovering my roots in a really whole sense, and started my journey of finding friends and making family in India. And now I go back and I just feel like, oh my gosh, it can be a home.
Mm. 'Cause I know that you recently returned from a bit of an exploratory journey, which you aptly named Almas on Tour. And you mentioned then that you try and go back to India periodically, but what was it initially that inspired you to undertake this personal pilgrim of sorts?
So I used to have an Instagram called Almas Explores, and I grew up in Zambia, and my mum would put me on a plane and send me to London, just because my aunties and stuff were here during the holidays. So I've always been moving, and I've always been really comfortable with traveling. So I started Almas Explores, and it was like a travel blog and all that stuff. And then I was somewhere along the line, I just was like, that needs to change to Almas on Tour, because I'm taking myself on tour, one, and as in touring, moving around. And then also, this was before I was DJing, and I was like, I'm going to go on tour, and it's going to be Almas on Tour, and it's going to be called that. And that sort of... Every time I travel, I discover that I'm a child of the universe, and my home is the world. And I find myself in all of these different places and with different people. And this last trip that I was on was absolutely chaotic. I was only there for like 7 weeks, but I lived in 8 different places. My accommodation that I had planned just didn't come through. And I also didn't realize that I was going to India in their summer, which is every day is 40 to 50 degrees heat. One day we reached 50 and there was like a warning. Legit, things were melting, like the roads were melting. I kind of was like, oh, it's fine. I don't need AC. Like, I'll be fine. It'll be fine. It was not fine. The first week that I was there, I had heat stroke. And I just sort of got up. It was in the nighttime too, so not even in the sun. But I got up and I sort of took two steps. And then I was just out. And the next thing I remember was like my friends like slapping my face. And I'm like, dude, why are you slapping my face? Stop slapping my face. But after that, like the first conscious thought I had was, I'm alive. And I talked to my therapist about this now because I thought I died. Like, as in the thought for me to wake up and be like, I'm alive. Like, I went blank, like so blank. And then I had my eyes open and I was thinking, I'm alive, I'm fine. But I couldn't speak. So like my eyes were really wide and I was trying to communicate. And then I was like, this is what coma's like. So I was just having these thoughts like in my brain, not being able to communicate. And it was actually quite profound. And I went back to my therapist 2 days later and I was like, Jasmine, I'm not afraid of death anymore. And she was just like shaking and she's like, how much water are you on? Like, and I was like, I'm not. Like, I legit like experienced death and life and I'm here and it's great. But all this to say is every time I travel, these kinds of things happen, whether they're good, bad. And actually, I don't believe in good or bad. They just kind of are. But I've had like readers pull me over and be like, I really want to do your reading right now. And I just have these experiences and I just, they always come back to like aligning and like tapping into my wider sense of creativity. And I would say anyone in this world should travel to kind of gain more perspective. Because as soon as you step out of the UK, you kind of realize that there's so many other things happening other than sort of what's going on here. And in each country too, that, you know, your news is only kind of within your space, I suppose. So it's helped me gain more perspective, have more patience, get to know people, have a bit more of a worldly sense when I'm approaching campaigns and projects and art, being asked to speak on behalf of other groups maybe, or be part of an advisory board. I'm really trying to like get people to be fearless with being curious.
Being fearless with being curious. That is brilliant. I am without doubt stealing that one. So you've racked up over 70 episodes of your brilliant podcast, What Is This Behaviour? And recently launched the WITB 101, a directory of South Asian people going against the grain. Tell us everything.
Okay, so Ruben, my co-host, and I have been collaborating on, can I swear on this podcast? Have worked on many shitty concepts that we've tried to execute. No disrespect, Ruben. Let's just be honest. No, some of them have been quite brilliant, but some of them haven't hit. And some of that has been down to timing. And just before the pandemic, Ruben called me up and he said, Almas, I think I want to start a podcast with you and Aaron, who's his brother. Aaron's amazing. So is Ruben. Like, they're both really accomplished in their fields and really passionate about what they do. Aaron used to be the video director for Mr. Porter. And Ruben is an edutainer. And so he sort of merges like alternative education and I would say, I don't know if he'd say this, but motivational speaking, I'd say. He's very like Esther Perel and all of those guys. So he called me up and I was like, wow, haven't ever sat down with two other South Asian people ever and had conversations. Wow. All three of us grew up in non-South Asian communities. And in the creative scene, we didn't know many people, maybe an odd few, but this was before we're seeing kind of this, I would say, like revisiting of South Asian creativity on a global scale, especially in the West. I say that because it's always been happening back home. You know, it's in our blood. You just look at the food, look at the dress, look at films, look at music. Like, creativity is in our blood. So we just started unpacking stuff, man. That's what it was.
Just shooting the shit.
Honestly, we realised that there's no fancy dress options aside from, like, Mowgli.
Yeah, I've listened to that one. Yeah,
that's my favourite episode. And then, so we, you know, we have a structure where we have a guest episodes and us episodes. Guest episodes is amazing because what we've started to do is connect with the global South Asian community, those of us that are going against the grain. And that's not to disrespect the grain either. And what we mean by the grain is the expectation to work in like medicine, academia, and money, I suppose. But what we're finding is those hard skills really facilitate those soft skills, and there's a lot of us in the South Asian community that are that do both, you know, and they really like complement each other. And so we have our episodes where that's where we're kind of talking about things that are we're passionate about, or we're curious about, or that we think will chime well with our community. And so, sort of similar to you in this particular project, it's an opportunity for us to ask all the questions and chat to people that we wouldn't otherwise necessarily chat to. It's very different for me because I'm part of a collective and in a community again after being independent for so long. But I love it. We're kind of like this like three-headed dog, really, that like can hit all these different angles. There's 10 years between us. As well, as in we've got, I'm the youngest, then you've got Aaron and then Ruben. So we're really sort of spanning experience and where we are in our careers and that kind of stuff. And we would have these sessions, and we still do, where we sort of try and ideate and come up with ideas and ideate and come up with ideas. And we just sort of had this session where we thought, what would the podcast be in addition to it actually just being a podcast? And so we had like merchandise, we had like live events, and then Aaron was like, well, what about a place where we can gather, I suppose, and connect South Asian creatives, because he is a director and often would be looking for different people within the industry, the creative industry, that are South Asian. And the response really from a lot of people that were hiring were like, well, we don't know who they are. We can't find them. There aren't any, actually, is what a lot of the response was. And we know that that's not true. You just have to look and find, you know? And we thought, well, kind of to one, connect encourage collaboration between the South Asian community, and then two, provide an actual living, breathing resource for the creative industry to now look into, we would create the What Is This Behavior 101, which is 101 people periodically being added to this growing directory across various categories. So we've got like activism and education, you've got food, you've got film and entertainment, music, sports and fitness, categories that you would otherwise not necessarily see South Asian people visible in abundance. And there's power in seeing yourself, and there's power in saying to agencies, saying to recruiters, saying to casting directors, here we are, tap into it. And it's an open resource. We have thought about it being a product that you sell to agencies, but actually we really want it to tap into the idea of community. Mm. We also want it to be different from the lists that come out every year. So it's not a definitive list, one. And it's not a list that you're sort of the year of that year and then you're sort of out the door. It's no, this is a growing space. And we're asking our community to nominate people too, so then we can widen our pool. So we've kind of taken that model of lists, and we've thought about how we can sort of weave in our core values of community and collaboration into it. And hopefully it be something that is revolutionary in that it's for us, by us, which in itself just changes the tone. So that's the pod and What Is This Behavior 101.
So good. And how can people find the directory?
So you go onto the What Is This Behavior podcast website, and it's literally there on the homepage, and you can download that resource for free onto your computer and send that out. And that's what we want. We want people to download it and share it with whoever they feel needs to see. And hopefully that is the jump off point to find so many other people, because you just have to go and check those people out and you'll suddenly be in this world of creativity rooted in South Asian heritage.
While we're on the subject of creativity, we touched on this briefly earlier, but I'd love to chat about your personal creative process. So as a multidisciplinary, do your creative mechanisms vary from project to project? Do you find yourself accessing different techniques for your different forms of output?
Great question. Yes, I have a few that I bounce between. So if you think about like a sound desk with lots of different channels, I think about which channels I'm kind of cranking up and which ones I'm kind of bringing down intentionally. Because before, I used to be at the mercy of all of my different disciplines. So right now, I would say that I'm in sort of music, DJ and a tastemaker in that space bag. I'd also say that because I have been communicating for so long, I'm now being asked to communicate for people. So strategize how brands and institutions and projects want to speak to people. Those kind of go up. So there's that. And I consciously know that, which means I don't beat myself up for not serving the other ones. Right. The other one that I would say is so useful for anyone in any practice is Disney's Three Rooms. So you've got, legend says that Disney had this process and of ideation. And if an idea did not survive that three room process, it wouldn't make it. And so I'm quite brutal, I think, with myself in the best way. I don't get attached to ideas. I see them and I'm like, can they be better? So the reason why this is useful is for one, your ideation process, as two, to figure out who you are in an ideation process. You've got the dreamer or the dreamer room. You've got the realist or the realist room. And then you've got the spoiler or the spoilist room. Spoiler room. I'm a dreamer. And once I established that, I realized that there was a reason why I didn't get on with producers so early in the creative process. Because I would say, I want a massive flower in the basement of this building. And when I say massive, I mean like filling up the room. And then the producer in that creative space would be like, well, but we haven't got budget for that. And then I'd get really upset because it was not that I couldn't do it, but it was blocking my creative process. So your dreamer phase is where you get a brief, right? Or you have an idea and you basically like just dream. Don't think about how, don't think about where the money's coming from. Don't think about what materials you have or what resources you have. You just need to think about, how do I expansively think about this idea? Now, it's important that you think beyond your resources, because if you already are thinking within your resource limit, then your idea will be limited. And the idea is that you can think expansively and then you scale back, or you think practically about how it's done, which is where the realist room comes in. The realist comes in and says, how can this be done? And that might be like, well, you can't have a flower in that basement, like a massive gigantic flower, Alice in Wonderland style. But maybe what you can do is have a projection, so you can still get the idea across. And then once you've got the what and the how, you then come in with the spoiler. Now the spoiler, I know it sounds negative, and actually I'd like to coin this term. So Disney, if you're listening, I might be doing that. As in not Disney the person, Disney the company. Now the spoiler comes in and really pokes holes in the practical element, but it's so key to be a spoiler even when you're ideating yourself, because that means that you've creatively thought about what you're doing, you've thought about how you're going to do it, and you've thought about everything that can go wrong. So by the time you've reached this idea, maybe when you're pitching to someone else, or you're actually at the stage where the flower's in the room and you're inviting people in, you've thought about like, well, if you're working somewhere like India, we're going to need a second generator because electricity could cut out. Fine. That's how it's going to work if there's a hole, right? Can it work if it's a daytime exhibition, if you're going to have projection? All of this stuff. So that's a method that I use and I highly recommend, and I teach a lot as well to people, to get you through that process and or identify when you want to bring in that producer, when you want to bring in a group of people maybe to soundboard, and allow yourself to really think expansively with permission, so and you know what you're doing.
I'm walking away today with so many new ideas. I love it. So to finish things off, as we always do, can you recommend something that we should read, listen to, or watch that has helped you gain an insight into a culture unfamiliar to your own?
Okay, there's two things. I'll start off with an actual thing, and then I'll start off, and then I'll sort of tail off with an experience. So I spent the first 2 months of this year in Ghana, which everyone should go. It's amazing. And one of my good friends over the years, and also he's a writer, Christian Adolfo, has a published book out as part of a series called A Quick Ting On. And A Quick Ting On is like basically an entry point into a culture. And he's written, I think it might actually be the first ever book on Afrobeats. And I went to the book launch here and I've read the book. And if you're thinking about or wanting to learn about the roots of this particular music genre, which is now, I think, might be one of the fastest growing music genres on a global scale. Don't quote me on that. But he just really launches you into the basics first, the foundations first, different words, but also through a personal sort of view, from the experience of a young Ghanaian boy growing up in London. And then through that, you will then discover the full series. So I would say A Quick Ting on Afrobeats is a book that just gave me a different perspective and launched me into like learning a bit more into this genre, which is quite fluid, and we kind of maybe when art's around us, we not take it for granted, but we kind of interact with it on a surface level. But I feel really empowered when I learn more about cultures and I know sort of what I'm talking about, so it just offered me that. Yeah, so there's that. And then in that same trip in Ghana, I went to there's a skate park. I don't know what it's called, but there's a skate park there, and I learned about the Ghanaian skate culture. And again, something that you sort of would never think that you'd see but never thought that I would sort of stumble across it in Accra. Yeah. And on Thursdays, I think it's Thursdays, they do women only days, and you can go in and people donate trainers. And so if you don't have trainers or you don't have skate shoes specifically, yeah, you can go and get helmets, like knee pads and stuff, skateboards and shoes, and you can just learn to skate. Amazing. And I think Virgil Abloh maybe designed it. Amazing. I'm gonna Google this as we're talking, because I think it's important to know the name. Yeah. But that was a whole subculture within a culture that I just never, I just didn't know it existed. Let's have a look. I'm going to go in skate park, Ghana. Freedom Skate Park, that's what it's called. Freedom, and it says the best and most accessible skate park in Ghana. Yeah, it's there, and you should go if you're ever there, and everyone should go to Ghana.
What a legend. Please, please, please go and check out the What Is This Behaviour podcast and download the WITB 101. As always, the recommendations Almas made will be in the description. Until next time.